Hare Krishna. Practically speaking, Sanat Kumar's basic reply, which summarizes everything that he is going to speak, his basic reply to the question that Maharaj Prithu asked, the question of course was, how can those who are involved in household life according to their previous karma, because everyone is engaged in this world according to their karma, indeed our bodies are made up of our karma. If we had no karma, we would have no material body. So the question was, how could one who is involved in activities that are going to entangle them further in material life, how could anything of true benefit come to them? How can they gain some good? And then in text, he tells the conclusion, Sanat Kumar tells the conclusion of how these persons and all persons will gain good. It has been conclusively decided in the Shastras, the scriptures, after due consideration, that the ultimate goal for the welfare of human society is detachment from the bodily concept of life and increased and steadfast attachment for the Supreme Lord, who is transcendental beyond the modes of material nature. So the next texts that we had read up until the day before yesterday describe the process of detaching through the process of attachment. The process of detaching from the bodily concept of life, but the emphasis was on the process of attaching to Krishna, which automatically would detach one from the bodily concept of life. So that process of gaining attachment to Krishna was to become full, saturated in thoughts about Krishna, especially the consciousness filled with hearing about Krishna, and then of course chanting about Krishna, and then naturally remembering Krishna. But here in this text, both of these things must happen. So speaking straight from the point of view of bhakti, Sanat Kumar has described the process of hearing and chanting. And then in the text that we began yesterday and the more ones today, he's describing this detachment from the bodily concept of life through becoming fixed. The process of hearing continuously saturates the consciousness, it purifies the consciousness, and gradually one must become fixed in the truths that he has heard, that he is Krishna's servant, and that he is not his body. And by hearing about Krishna, one naturally becomes attached to Krishna. Why? Because? Yes. And why become attached to Krishna when there's no difference between Krishna Katha and Krishna?
Well, there's nothing else that would exist in
Krishna. That's true. Yes. Both are better answers than the one I was thinking. I was thinking of the simple one, that Krishna is all attractive. Yeah. Yeah, the higher taste. But why does it give one the higher taste? Because Krishna is all attractive. He's so sweet. He's so powerful. But beyond his power is his sweetness. And beyond his sweetness is anyone know the answer to this one? What is beyond Krishna's sweetness? What is beyond his sweetness? What is the most attractive aspect of Krishna? Even more than his Aishwarya, Madhurya, Karunya, Sarupa Purnata, Bhaktivatsalya. how he deals with his devotees. That is what makes Krishna. He has those other qualities to the fullest extent, sarupa purnita, but it's his dealings with his devotees, his lila madhurja, one of the most attractive aspects of Krishna. If just the Aishwaryan sweetness, that is available in Vaikuntha, but there is no sweet, incredibly intimate dealings with Krishna and his devotees in Vaikuntha, except in the topmost Vaikuntha planet of Golok Vrindavan. This is all attractive Krishna. So attractive that his Aishwarya becomes covered by the sweetness of his everything about Krishna, his sweet face, his sweet smile, and his sweet dealings with his devotees. And Krishna comes to earth, we can say, although he doesn't come to earth like we come to earth, he remains always in the spiritual world. Param in Vrindavan, Param ekam nagacchati. He comes to display these incredibly intimate pastimes with his devotees, specifically for the purpose of attracting us, and specifically for the purpose of allowing us to see that those relationships that attract us in this world, the mundane rasas of this world, they are just reflections of the spiritual dealings with Krishna. And as the reflection cannot truly satisfy one. We need the substance. So similarly, we need the substance of our relationship with Krishna to bring the satisfaction that we are longing for. Do the learned members of this assembly agree with this point? Vanamali Prabhu? Yes, we need our relationship with Krishna. And we exist in this world forgetting that we need that relationship with Krishna. And forgetting that our material existence is going to end in this body. But we forget that's actually the need, the prayojan. Prayojan also means necessity. This is the true necessity. Krishna bhule se jeev, anadiya bahimuk. We have to turn back to Krishna, back home. So when one becomes fixed through the process of hearing about Krishna and chanting about Krishna and gaining the mercy of Krishna through the mercy of Krishna's devotees, one becomes fixed in seeing nothing but Krishna. Premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena santa sadaiva hridayeshu vilokayanti yam shyama sundaram achintya guna swarupam govindam hari purusham tamaham bhajami. And one has no interest, as text 28 said, of fulfilling anything, any of his own desires. He has no interest. Just imagine, no interest, not artificially restrained, but no interest in fulfilling one's own desires and only interested in fulfilling the desires of the Lord. What is that called? That's defined, mentioned in text 28. What is that called when you have no interest in fulfilling your own desires, but interest only in fulfilling another's desires? Yes, love, prema pamartomahan. When that is directed to Krishna and expanded out fully, then our existence is perfect. And until then, our existence is quite imperfect. Existence meaning who we are. That sense of I-ness, that identity that we have, it is incomplete until it is full Another way of saying that is until the living entity has taken shelter of Krishna's internal energy. Because we are tiny, we need a shelter. We cannot stay unsheltered. We will either have the shelter of the external energy or the internal energy. So in text 29, this dissolution and detachment of the bodily concept of life is continued to be described, as we had heard in text 21, as the product of spiritual advancement. And these texts, again, are very appealing to the way that, to jnanis and how they proceed in their spiritual path. Only because of different causes does a person see a difference between himself and others. So it sounds like we are all one. So that is very appealing to jnanis. Just as one sees the reflection of a body appearing differently manifested on water, on oil, in a mirror, but actually, although the reflections of the same object in those different, on those different articles, the water, the oil, or in a mirror, the reflections will appear differently. Still, the object that is being reflected is one. There is only one of those objects, but the reflections appear quite different. One object. So similarly, there is one object in all living entities, and that is, as Prabhupada will explain in his purport, there is the Jiva Shakti, the living entities. So there's one of Krishna's energies, although there is individuality. Prabhupada's purport. So this one vision is wonderful, actually. Wonderful. One vision. The spirit soul is one, Prabhupada says. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, He is ultimately everything. Nothing is separate from Him. He is manifested in Svamsa and Vibhinangsa. So, Bina Angsa. Vibhina Angsa. Different Angsas or parts, as opposed to Svamsa, Krishna's own part. So one is Jiva Tattva, one is Vishnu Tattva. The Jivas are Vibhinangsa expansions. The different incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead of Svamsa. Thus there are different potencies of the Supreme Lord, and there are different expansions of the different potencies. In this way, for different reasons, there are different expansions of the one same principle, nothing in existence. There is nothing in existence other than the Lord and His potencies. So therefore He is called the Absolute Truth. Nothing is external to Him. This understanding is real knowledge, but when the living entity is covered by the upadhi, or designated body, he sees differences, exactly as one sees differences in reflections of oneself on water, on oil, or in a mirror. So what is the difference, in case none of you have seen a reflection of yourself on oil? We've probably seen our reflections of ourselves on mirrors and water. So when something is reflected on water, it's shimmering or moving. When it is reflected on ice, it appears fixed. Have any of you ever seen your reflection on ice? Have any of you ever seen ice? Yes or no?
Yes.
Where did you ever see ice? Huh? Oh, in your Pepsi Cola. Thumbs up. Very good. It appears fixed. When it is reflected on oil, it appears hazy. Hazy means foggy. The subject is one, but under different condition, it appears differently. When the qualifying factor is taken away, in other words, the factor, that thing that is causing the different qualities to come out in the same object, the whole appears to be one. In other words, when one comes to the Paramhamsa or perfectional stage of life by practicing bhakti yoga, he sees only Krishna everywhere. For him, there is no other objective. In conclusion, due to different causes, the living entity is visible in different forms as an animal, human being, demigod, tree. Actually, every living entity is the marginal potency of the Supreme Lord. In Bhagavad Gita 5:18, therefore it is explained that one who actually sees the spirit soul does not distinguish between a learned brahmana, a dog, an elephant, or a cow. That's what it says. What's the verse? Brahmani Pandita Samadarsha. One who is actually learned sees only the living entity, not the outward covering. When we look in ice and water and oil and a mirror, if we saw the same object, even though it's reflected somewhat differently in all those different items, we'd say, I know what this is. This is a Giriraj reflected in all those different objects. I wouldn't say, oh, this is a mirror, this is some ice, this is that. No, a person in knowledge will see the actual substance, not the imposition, qualitative imposition upon that substance. Differentiation is therefore the result of our different karma, or fruit of activities. And when we stop fruit of activities, that means, please note that that means that every one of us is not our body. Even though when we look at each other, we see bodies, this is not actually us. That is quite astounding when you think about it. And according to what my body is, and according to the modes of material nature that control my body, when I see another body, there is either Icha or Dvesha, or different combinations according to their modes of material nature. There's either attraction or repulsion of different degrees, but this has nothing to do with the soul. This has nothing to do with the soul. And unless we develop this vision, this equal vision, we can't actually elevate ourselves in consciousness. Where is this spoken? Where does it say that this vision is required to make advancement? I'll give you a hint. I'll give you more than a hint. I'll read it. Kapila Muni again. This is in chapter 29, Explanation of Devotional Service, Canto 3, text 21. We'll read a few verses. Very important. I am present in every living entity as the super soul. Pandita Samadarshana. If someone neglects or disregards the super soul everywhere, and engages himself in worship of the deity in the temple, that is simply imitation. Heavy enough? More. One who worships the deity of Godhead in the temples but does not know that the Supreme Lord as Paramatma is situated in every living entity's heart must be in ignorance and is compared to one who offers oblations into ashes. Does one get benefit of the sacrifice by pouring the ghee into ashes? No. Worship of Godhead, but does not know that the Paramatma is in every living entity. Very heavy, strong, Kapila Muni. One who offers me respect, but is envious of the bodies of others, and is therefore a separatist, sees things separately from me, a separatist, never attains peace of mind. Because of his inimical behavior towards other living entities. My dear mother, even if he worships with proper rituals and paraphernalia, a person who is ignorant of my presence in all living entities never pleases me by worship of my deities in the temple. Performing his prescribed duties, one should worship the deity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead until he realizes my presence in his own heart and in the hearts of other living entities as well. As the blazing fire of death, I cause great fear to whoever makes the least discrimination between himself and other living entities because of a differential outlook. Therefore, through charitable gifts and attention, as well as through friendly behavior, and by viewing all to be alike, one should propitiate me. What is propitiate? Huh? Yes, satisfy. Yes, is that what you said? Oh, you're made up of a verb. Okay. Ingratiate. Yes, we do. Didn't make it up. You just have a huge vocabulary in English. You can just imagine what your French vocabulary is like. So therefore, through charitable gifts and attention, as well as through friendly behavior, and by viewing all to be alike, one should propitiate me, satisfy me who abides in all creatures as their very self, by pleasing all the living entities, by being kind to all living entities. That is wonderful. Instructions of Kapila Deva, and the same thing is being said here by Sanat Kumar. We'll finish Prabhupada's purport. This is only possible in Krishna consciousness. In this movement, there are many different races of men from all parts of the world participating. But because they think of themselves as servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they do not differentiate between black and white, yellow and red. The Krishna consciousness movement is therefore the only means to make the living entity free of all designations. Because there are so many differences, but there is one common element. We are all servants of Krishna. If that is emphasized and lived, then there can be peace within the Krishna consciousness movement, as Prabhupada is saying. Otherwise, there's going to be trouble. We can bet on it. Although we don't bet. Especially we don't gamble, but we can count on it. It will be trouble. So, Sanat Kumar continues. When one's mind, again, these points are all to free us from the bodily concept of life, as he said. When one's mind and senses are attracted to sense objects for enjoyment, so that consciousness of oneness, what steals that consciousness away? When one's mind and senses are attracted to sense objects for enjoyment, the mind becomes agitated as a result of continually thinking of sense objects. One's real consciousness almost becomes lost, like the water in a lake that is gradually sucked up by the big grass straws on its bank. One's actual consciousness, which is very wonderful, it sees one and it is wonderful, it is lost by what?
Sense.
The mind being attracted. As soon as one is in the Purusha Bhav, the mood of the I am the enjoyer, Ishwaraham, Aham Bhogi, instead of I am the servant of Krishna, then one's consciousness becomes sucked away, one's true consciousness. It becomes compressed, small, insignificant, covered. Purport by Prabhupada. In this verse, it is very nicely explained how our original consciousness becomes polluted and we gradually become almost completely forgetful of our relationship with the Supreme Lord. Where is that? Somewhere it's described the consciousness of a tree. Does anyone remember what that consciousness, that description was like? Oh, not that part. How covered it is. It says it almost experiences nothing except some pain, some deep pain. In every living conditioned soul's heart, in the heart of his heart, there is a deep pain, even a tree. And that deep pain is caused by our turning our back on Krishna and being absent from Krishna. We can cover up that pain, we can try to forget about it, we can intoxicate it away for some time, but it will always come back in a strong form. We can cover it up by attempting affection to so many other living entities, filling it with food, filling it with this and that, money. But until we love Krishna, it will not be removed. In the previous verse, it is recommended that we should always keep in touch with the devotional service of the Lord, so that the blazing fire of devotional service can gradually burn into ashes, material desires, and we can become liberated from the repetition of birth and death, because that constant hearing about Krishna that was recommended, being in touch with the devotional service of the Lord, being in touch with Krishna, it burns to ashes the covering, these material desires, which are the attractions that the conditioned soul has to being the center of existence. They are burned to ashes. They become devoid of any substance. Ash has no substance to it. If we would like the material coverings over our heart to be burned to ashes, to be made insubstantial, non-substantial, Sanat Kumar has explained the process by constantly, continuously being in touch with Krishna through his service, hearing, chanting, remembering, serving in one way or another. And it can burn into ashes material desires, and we can become liberated from the repetition of birth and death. This is also how we can indirectly keep our staunch faith in the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the mind is allowed to think of sense gratification continuously, it becomes the cause of our material bondage. If our mind is simply filled with sense gratification, even though we want Krishna consciousness, by continuous practice we cannot forget the subject matter of sense gratification. Matirna Krishna Paratakspatova Mityo Vipajeta Grihavratanam Andantago Bhivishatatamisram Purnas Purna Charvita Charvananam. But that's not exactly what Prabhupada is referring to. That's a person attached to material enjoyment. He wants that. He can never become Krishna conscious. But here, a person who wants to become Krishna conscious, if he's meditating upon the objects of the senses, it does not work. If one takes up the sannyas order of life, but is not able to control the mind, he will think of objects of sense gratification, namely family, society, expensive house. Even though he goes to the Himalayas or the forest, his mind will continue thinking of the objects of sense gratification. In this way, gradually one's intelligence will be affected. When intelligence is affected, one loses his original taste for Krishna consciousness. So what's the cure for this? The mind has to be focused upon Krishna. And how to do that? Constant, continuously hearing. If one is not able to do that, then one should work very hard for Krishna and be detached from the results, then gradually. And what happens if one has so many bad sanskaras, impressions in his mind from the early part of one's life, that it's practically impossible for him to give up these thoughts. Then what should one do? Excuse me?
Take the shelter of the Lord of Christ.
Yes, and what will he advise him to do? Yes, here in Chan. But one should act according to one's position in one's capacity. So one shouldn't take a huge leap forward then, if one is in a precarious position like that. But then, next question is, what happens if one, due to some enthusiasm or some great inspiration or the power of some sadhu, he takes a big step forward and then he realizes, oh, my consciousness is filled with things that shouldn't be there, but yet I'm in a position that's high. Then what should he do? Should he immediately step down? As Prabhupada said, one shouldn't. What should he do? He should really take shelter of devotees, but and hearing and chanting, because his position is in fact somewhat precarious. So one either has to step forward or humbly step forward in taking shelter of Krishna, not letting go of Krishna's lotus feet for a moment. Just like if someone has a knife at your throat, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare, because you don't know when. Be very, very extremely serious. So one has to note the extremely serious situation. The example given here, Prabhupada's, the last paragraph of Prabhupada's purport to 30, is very appropriate. If a big lake is covered all around by long kusha grass, like just like columns, the waters dry up. Why does the water dry up? The grass sucks up all the water. Similarly, when the big columns of material desire increase, the clear water of consciousness is dried up. Therefore, these columns of kusha grass should be cut or thrown away from the very beginning. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was instructed that if from the very beginning we do not take care of the unwanted grass in the paddy field, the fertilizing agents or water will be used by them and the paddy plants will dry up. Kuti nati nisracha jivahim sam laba puja pratishtari yata upasaka gan. Upasaka means weeds. They have to be pulled out. There has to be weeding going on. The material desire for sense enjoyment is the cause of our fall down in this material world, and thus we suffer the threefold miseries and continuous birth, death, old age, and disease. However, if we turn our desires towards the transcendental loving service of the Lord, our desires become towards the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Excuse me, our desires become purified. We cannot kill desires. We cannot kill desiring. We have to purify them of different designations. If we constantly think of being a member of a particular nation, society, or family, and continuously think about them, we become very strongly entangled in the conditioned life of birth and death. We can read this in different ways. We can read it just like we've read it 1,000 times. If we continuously think about material objects, family, society, etc., we become strongly entangled in the conditional life of birth and death. Or we can read it understanding what that means and thinking about, well, what do we think about these things? And what will be the result? Strongly entangled in conditioned life. That means like a fish becomes entangled in a net. He's caught. He can't get out. And what does that getting out mean? For the entanglement mean? It means birth and death. Birth, what does that mean? Crying immediately. Death, what does that mean? Very, very terrifying. Everything that we're attached to is finished. Everything we depend on is gone. All these attachments that we were continuously thinking of are finished anyway. Pain. So to make the point that we should, first of all, that we should read carefully, not in a superficial, quick way to answer the questions on the test, but read in a way that we're getting the association, the intended meaning of the sadhu, Prabhupada, and Sukadev, and Maitreya Muni, and Sanat Kumar, and Sutta Goswami. So read carefully, thoughtfully. And in case we miss the point, this particular point, the next section, starting in 25, chapter 25, is going to make the point of what it means. Repeated birth and death very strongly. The story of Paranjana, spoken for the benefit of whom? Who did you say? Yes, also by Prachini Bharishad. By whom? Who spoke to Prachini Bharishad? Narad. Narad Muni, yes. But if our desires, and here's the way, if our desires are applied to the service of the Lord, so we can read that superficially and not think about it. But we're desiring living entities. It means we have to desire something in Krishna's service. We have to desire, have to strongly desire in Krishna's service. Otherwise, these other desires will be upasakagan, weeds. So if one's desires are applied to the service of the Lord, they become purified. That will purify us. And thus we become immediately freed from material contamination. Immediately. Desiring to please Krishna. Text 31. When one deviates from his original consciousness, again, this is points regarding detachment from the bodily concept of life. So deviates from his original consciousness. How is that original consciousness just described several verses ago? Yes, but in between, in the first verse that we read today. Seeing the commonality of all living entities, of everything, is Krishna's energy. So one who deviates, seeing Krishna, in other words, seeing everything in relationship to Krishna, not in relationship to bodies. When one deviates from his original consciousness, what causes the deviation? Material desires was just described. He loses the capacity to remember his previous position or recognize his present one. When remembrance is lost, all knowledge acquired is based on a false foundation. What is the false foundation? Thinking on my body, and we base all our knowledge on that, but the foundation is false, and therefore, if the foundation of a very tall building is weak or false and crumbling, the tall building will topple. And when this occurs, learned scholars consider that the soul is lost. In other words, a life based on the bodily concept of life means that the soul is lost. Very strong preaching. Because its knowledge isn't being exhibited. It's like being dead, like an animal. Everything he does is performed in ignorance. His wealth, his consciousness has been lost. Again, 32, spoken very directly. There is no stronger obstruction to one's self-interest than thinking other subject matters to be more pleasing than one's self-realization. For human society, constantly thinking of how to earn money and apply it for sense gratification brings about the destruction of everyone's interests. When one becomes devoid of knowledge and devotional service, he enters into species of life like those of trees and stones. So this type of inactivity is punishment for the soul. Such a punishment because he is meant by nature to be free, uncovered, free. But this is such a restriction. We'll read from Prabhupada's purport approximately towards the bottom of the page, which is about 2/3 of the purport. If we do not properly execute our mission of life in self-realization, nature's punishment will render us inactive by putting us in the form of trees and hills. If you want to be a big man, you can be a hill. Therefore, activities directed towards sense gratification are condemned herein. One who is constantly thinking of activities to earn money and gratify the senses is following a path which is suicidal. Factually, all human society is following this path. Some way or other, people are determined to earn money or get money by borrowing or stealing or all, and applying that for sense gratification. Such a civilization is the greatest obstacle in the path of self-realization. Therefore, text 34, those who strongly desire, so the bodily concept of life has been described and the process of breaking it, and the dangers of the bodily concept of life have been described. Therefore, those who strongly desire to cross the ocean of nescience. What does nescience mean?
Ignorance.
Ignorance means the bodily concept of life. For a start, must not associate with the mode of ignorance. Why? For hedonistic activities. Hedonistic means activities that are just meant for sense pleasure. For hedonistic activities, sensuous activities, are the greatest obstructions to realization of religious principles. This has been explained many times, even in the verses of today's class. Thinking about sense gratification, it sucks away, diminishes one's consciousness. Just like what? So hedonistic activities are the result of hedonistic thinking. Because what one thinks of, one will do. It's just a matter of time. And the result of hedonistic activities is deeper and deeper thinking about hedonistic activities. So one becomes further entangled. It's not like the senses are not thankful masters, that if you serve them and do what they want and you obey your thirst, then they say, very good, you have done this for me, now you're free. Now you don't have to listen to me anymore, you're a free person. No, just the opposite. They entangle one still more with more desires. This is the result of playing and with the modes of passion. Deepens the covering into ignorance more thickly. So these are the greatest obstructions to realization of religious principles, economic development, regulated sense gratification, at last liberation. So what is this saying? That hedonistic activities, the verse actually makes a distinction, although I didn't speak of it like this, between hedonistic activities means unrestricted sense gratification as opposed to shastric restricted sense gratification. Hedonism implies unrestricted sense gratification. Non-shastric, because if one follows the shastra, the result is detachment. And if one follows one's senses, obeys one's senses, the result is deeper ignorance. One's passion turns into deep ignorance as opposed to being sublimated into goodness and detachment. Purport. The four principles of life allow one to live according to religious principles, to earn money according to one's position in society, to allow the senses to enjoy the sense objects according to regulations, and to progress along the path of liberation from this material attachment. As long as the body is there, it is not possible to become completely free from all these material interests. It is not, however, recommended that one act only for sense gratification and earn money for that purpose only, sacrificing all religious principles. At the present moment, human civilization does not care for religious principles. It is, however, greatly interested in economic development without religious principles. For instance, in a slaughterhouse, the butchers certainly get money easily. All they have to do is kill animals. But such business is not based on religious principles. Similarly, there are many nightclubs for sense gratification and brothels for sex. Sex, of course, is allowed in married life, but prostitution is prohibited because all our activities are ultimately aimed at liberation, at freedom from the clutches of material existence. Similarly, although the government may license liquor shops, this does not mean that liquor shops should be opened unrestrictedly and illicit liquor smuggled. Licensing is meant for restricting. No one has to take a license for sugar, weed, or milk because there is no need to restrict these things. In other words, it is advised that one not act in a way that will obstruct the regular process of advancement in spiritual life and liberation. So in the Bhagavad Gita, there's a purport where Prabhupada explains that the path, our material life and our spiritual life are like the tracks of a train. They should be going in parallel directions. If our spiritual life is going one way and our material life is going a completely another way, it cannot work. The train of our existence will be derailed. So how to do that? How to get to become integrated? Spiritual, our physical, our emotional, intellectual lives integrated so that they're all going in the same direction and we are healthy. This is very important and it is done under guidance. So sometimes it is said that this way of going is a little slower than the path of the full surrendered way. But it is safer to take the slow way. So one should take the slow way unless one actually has the strength and the capacity to take the fast way. And then if one has the capacity to take the fast way, the path of full surrender, okay, Krishna, whatever you want of me, I will do. I am your servant. Then one should do that. So one needs to make these decisions about one's life in conjunction with in knowledge, in conjunction with one's spiritual master, the sadhus, the Vaishnavas, etc. So sometimes the slower, more integrated way is stressed because it's practical. And sometimes the path of full surrender is stressed because we don't want to think that that this is the ultimate. The ultimate is giving oneself fully to Krishna, and eventually one has to do that. And if one has the capacity, one should take the ultimate. And sometimes Krishna takes away all the alternatives. And then you choose, oh, I have to surrender. And then everyone says, oh, how wonderful, what a surrendered devotee. But Krishna has taken away all the alternatives. We read about that yesterday. This fool is asking for so many material things, I'll take everything away. Why should I satisfy his desires for sin? I'll take everything away. Harishya tadaram sanaya. So when I've heard Prabhupada say that when Krishna is pleased with someone, he gives so many things. And when Krishna is really pleased, he takes everything away. And when we hear that, we usually have a very cute smile on our face. But it's not fun when Krishna takes everything away, when he and you go crawling to him with no choice but the shelter of your lotus feet. Not fun. But ultimately, at the time of death, where will our only true shelter be? It cannot be anywhere on the physical, on the emotional, on the intellectual level. It has to be with Krishna. But the general principle is that we make all those parallel and going towards Krishna. So I've seen this tent when Prabhupada speaks, sometimes he'll say you should take the slow path, something like men will say, no, you should give everything. No, you should take the slow path. Because he'll say both, because and then we have to understand what the meaning of that is. And the slow path isn't a slow path, ultimately. It's just leading to the point of full surrender. And surrender itself isn't something that's done once and it's over with. It's ever increasing, ever increasing. When one is Krishna's and Krishna belongs to one, it's ever increasing. So the surrender must continuously deepen until one is fully sheltered by the lotus feet of Sisi Radha and Krishna and Goloka Vrindavan. So this purport is more speaking, Prabhupada, of on the gradual path. No one has to take a license for sugar, wheat, or milk because there is no need to restrict those things. In other words, it is advised that one not act in a way that will obstruct the regular process of advancement in spiritual life and liberation. The Vedic process of sense gratification is therefore planned in such a way that one can economically develop and enjoy sense gratification and yet ultimately attain liberation. Vedic civilization offers us all knowledge in the Shastras, and if we live a regulated life under the direction of Shastras and Guru, all our material desires will be fulfilled, and at the same time we will be able to go forward to liberation. And then the next verse will shift somewhat. Out of these four principles that were both said to be the Vedic principles, which is Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, religion, economic development, sense gratification, liberation. Liberation has to be taken very seriously. So now some shift is being made by Prabhupada. The other three are subject to destruction by the stringent law of nature, death. So we'll read from Prabhupada's purport a little way down. And this is the last text we shall read today. In this verse, liberation, moksha, is stressed. The other three items are material and therefore subject to destruction. Even if somehow we accumulate a great bank balance in this life and possess many material things, everything will be finished with death. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that death is the Supreme Personality of Godhead who ultimately takes away everything acquired by the materialistic person. Foolishly, we do not care for this. Foolishly, we are not afraid of death, nor do we consider that death will take away everything acquired by the process of Dharma, Artha, and Kama. By Dharma or pious activities, we may be elevated to the heavenly planets. But that this does not mean freedom from the clutches of birth, death, old age, and disease. The purport is that we can sacrifice our interests in Trivargya religious principles, economic development, and sense gratification. But we cannot sacrifice the cause of liberation. And then at the conclusion, listen carefully. The conclusion is that we should not stress pious activities, economic development, and sense gratification, but should concern ourselves with approaching Lord Vishnu in his spiritual planets, of which the topmost is Goloka Vrindavan, where Krishna lives. Therefore, this Krishna consciousness movement is the greatest gift for persons who are actually desiring liberation. Why? Why is it the greatest gift for persons who are actually desiring liberation in relationship to what was just said about our actual concern? Yes, Mr. Sankirtan. Huh? Yes, but I want more. But I want more. I want in relationship to what was just said in the purport. More. Specifically, Goloka Vrindavan. Approaching Lord Krishna as spiritual planets, of which the topmost is Goloka Vrindavan. So the Krishna consciousness movement is geared to bring people to Goloka Vrindavan. That is the concern. And therefore the movement is the greatest gift for someone desiring liberation, because it gives them the topmost liberation. Not only freedom, liberation is what prisoners want. But free people don't want liberation. Free people want to engage in the most meaningful and wonderful and pleasing activities. So the most pleasing and wonderful activity of the soul is with Krishna and Goloka Vrindavan. But one actually has the chance to interact with this supreme person, the most all-attractive, most beautiful, most famous, most sweet, most clever, most kind, most expert. What other wonderful qualities does he have? He's an expert linguist. He can speak every language. Huh? Excuse me? Not good. The best. Wonderful dresser. He's a joker. He makes very good jokes. He knows how to bring rasa into lila. Expert? Hero, yes. And his what? His what? For who? Thief. Now it's changing. Everyone is turning against Krishna. He steals butter to bring pleasure to the hearts of the people of Vrindavan. He knows he's magnanimous. He knows just how to bring out sweet pleasure from the hearts of everyone. Pain or ecstasy? No fun talking with everyone here. They know too much. Cannot talk in a simple way. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So tomorrow, if Krishna allows, we shall finish the instructions of Sanat Kumar. Tomorrow's Pritu. Who can summarize basically what he's instructed? In that one verse, it summarizes it. Yeah, detachment from the bodily concept of life. We identify with the body, but it's a source of misery. And better than hedonistic activities, if one has desires, material desires, is to perform the material desires according to the regulation of Shastra. That's the balancing point. But ultimately, don't strive for anything that can be taken by death. Go home. Go to Goloka.